The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
And then there were four. We're into the preliminary final round in the AFL season, and arguably we've got the four best teams of 2018 rightly playing off in this weekend's matches. We'll have a full preview of that and speak to a club legend as well. We're looking forward to that on the Fox Footy Podcast, brought to you by NIB, Health Cover, how it should be. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, and I've got the regular panel assembled here in the Fox Footy offices, the most objective MCC Demons member himself, Thomas Richard Morris the Fifth. How are you, Thomas?
The Fifth. Yeah. Thank you, Ben. Looking forward to speaking to David Neitz.
Yes.
Very soon. I've got to say, this is an amazing situation. I thought the Melbourne Football Club would not be in this year.
Mm.
But now they are. It's incredibly exciting.
You said that about the Dogs 2016, the Tigers last year, now the Demons.
Something in the air. And I don't agree with people that say the worst teams get worse and the best teams get better. There is a way you can rebuild. It just takes time and the right people. And Melbourne have done that, and they've done it very well.
They've got some good people. Speaking of good people, foxsports.com.au's Chief State League and 19th Man Scandal correspondent, Max Lawton.
Ask me anything about the NEAFL or the SANFL, except the teams in each league. I can tell you about these 19-man scandals, but I could not name every side.
Well, you can name North Adelaide and Woodville West Torrens.
I certainly can, the Roosters and the Eagles.
Now, this has gone nuts for us on foxsports.com.au over the past couple of days. Late last night, it was decided that
very late.
So I would even say early this morning,
correct.
It was North Adelaide were the result that happened in the preliminary final over the weekend was upheld, which means they will play Norwood, but Woodville West Torrens had a pretty good case. Do you want to explain how it all
went down? Yeah, this is the most ridiculous thing. And the idea that this has gotten people to care about the SANFL Grand Final is, SANFL, sorry, South Australia, is extraordinary in itself. So North Adelaide came back from 47 points down to win. Extraordinary enough. They had 19 men on the field for 3 minutes, 36.
3 minutes, 39 seconds.
Just to be approximate.
For all those playing at home.
And scored 8 points in that time, and they won by five. I was going to say it seems cut and dry, but of course it isn't cut and dry. They had to go to the SA Footy Commission. They went to an SANFL tribunal hearing.
Yep.
They had a retired Supreme Court judge deciding on this, ruling till 12:30 East Coast time. Deciding eventually that North Adelaide goes through to the grand final, and Woodville left wondering, they've broken the rules, but if we just call in a head count like the rule writers decided in 1898 when they wrote the rules of Australian football.
Yeah.
It's like the constitutionalists in the US who point to the founding fathers, the idea that a
Lincoln-esque
head count has to be called by the captain.
Paul Lincoln, I'll tell you that. Jefferson sort of areas.
Indeed.
Adams and Washington.
Oh, yes. Paul Revere, if you will.
Oh, well, it's incredible that the one time we're talking about the SANFL and the NEAFL all year is over a 19-man scandal. And it's also amazing that they've come to this conclusion that, in effect, North Adelaide are guilty, but they will not be punished in the way we all thought they'd be punished.
So is it $10,000 fine?
$10,000, and they get deducted 4 premiership points for the 2019 season.
Next year?
Yeah,
what?
Next year.
If I'm North Adelaide, I'm saying deduct us whatever you want next year, because we're playing at a grand final and we can win the flag this year.
You could make that offer to every team that makes a prelim and say, we'll do this and you're guaranteed to win the prelim, and they'd all take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's a bizarre set of circumstances, but I'm also intrigued that the AFL doesn't have jurisdiction over what's going on, Max. Can you explain that?
No, so the AFL doesn't have direct jurisdiction, but Jared Waitley told us on AFL 360 last night that they workshopped this exact scenario under their rules.
The AFL did?
And they said that in an AFL situation, if this happened, Woodville West Torrens would be playing in the grand final.
Okay, so what happens then, hypothetically, if in this period of 4 minutes, Woodville West Torrens kick 4 goals, even though North Adelaide have 19 men on the field. Then what happens?
I think the result would still stay as it was.
But what's the score? Because surely whatever the process is has to be uniformed regardless of what happens in those few minutes.
Yeah, so I don't know exactly whether the ruling by the AFL would be that the entire score is wiped, would be that the score in that period is wiped.
Oh, yes.
That would depend on the exact scenario.
You get what I'm saying?
Like
it's presumed that 19 men will always beat 18. it's not necessarily the case, as we've seen in the preseason competition, where I think the Giants, was it? Or no, Richmond had 16 or 17 on the field,
yep,
and Carlton had 18.
I think it's Port Adelaide.
Because clearly it makes sense. The more people, like 2 versus 1 is far more likely to win than 19 versus 18, well, and so it extends.
The Giants had this drink against Carlton during this season.
They did, actually, didn't they?
At the end of that game, remember, and they were still winning by over 100 points. It's extraordinary. I think the idea was also that not necessarily that the 19 and 18 would be dominant in that period, but that the 18 would then be more tired because they would be trying to man up on an extra man the whole time.
Well, it's just unfair. It's the principle of the situation, isn't it?
The incredible coincidence is that we've talked extensively about the Sandfall, but earlier in the day, the Neefall had their own situation where we had 19 on the field.
Yeah, so Southport were winning by about 50 points over the Sydney Neefall side. And we're found to have 19 men. This was right at the start of the fourth quarter for about 30 seconds. No scores were had. And they instead, the Neefall ruled it as an interchange violation, which I believe is what would happen if this was at AFL level.
Yep.
Because there would obviously be a lot more oversight with the interchange stewards and the like. So Sydney probably could have made a case that the Southport Sharks had to have their score wiped. But to be fair, if you're Sydney and Andrew Ireland was at the game, you don't want to win a flag when the other team wins by 60 points otherwise, and you win on a technicality.
Well, common sense prevails in this case. Isn't it interesting? We're talking about pure footy here.
Yes.
And I heard Gary Lyon on SEN talk about it this morning, and On the Couch was very footy-centric last night. Yes, there's trades, but this whole state league debacle has blown up in a way we never thought it would. Mm. And what it's proven is AFL football has so many grey areas.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
So many. What is right and what is wrong and what is in between?
And realistically, there are some news stories and there's the prelims coming up and everyone is most excited about the prelim matches themselves because they're going to be incredible.
Mm.
But in the build-up to a prelim, from a media perspective, it's sort of hard to find the right angle sometimes. It's sort of people care more about the match than the build-up, whereas during the season we have all these different storylines we can point to and try and analyse all of this stuff. So that's why this state league stuff can sort of gain all of this attention.
Yeah.
Because we need the drama. That's what people love. People thrive on drama.
It was just great to see Josh Carr coaching on the boundary line.
Yeah. Brother of Matthew.
Port Adelaide niggler back in the day. So you're right, Maxie. We will have to turn our attention to the prelim, unfortunately, now. But it has been a whirlwind couple of weeks for the Melbourne Football Club, Thomas. And I understand for yourself, who went as a punter on Friday night to see the D's beat the Hawks. It was another late night in the MCC.
It was, yeah. I was in the Percy Beams till it shut, actually.
Shuts, does it?
In fact, there were RSA. Is it RSA? Yeah, the Responsible Service of Alcohol.
Yep.
People walking around in fluoro vests to make sure people weren't drinking too much.
Right.
Which I think was quite funny, given that everyone was drinking too much, because everyone in there was a Melbourne supporter.
Make sure you drink wise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And afford to.
And it was better than the Geelong match, because everyone's thinking, we, Melbourne, are one match away from a grand final.
Yeah, so I want to pick up on that, because you saw in the post-match celebrations against Geelong, I thought the players celebrated that little bit more passionately after the Geelong game.
But monkey off the back.
It seemed a little bit more businessman-like, I think, after the Hawthorn game.
So the way I think of it is, the first one was monkey off the back. The second one is, we can do this. We can win this flag.
Yeah.
Hawthorn challenged exceptionally hard.
They did.
That second quarter, they were pushing the entire time, and Melbourne held them off. Now, they didn't play well in that second quarter, Melbourne, but they didn't play badly enough, as has been the case on a lot of occasions this year, to leak goals when the opposition has had the run of play.
Well, Hawthorn also didn't kick straight. I think that was key. I think early in that game, it felt to me like this was, it was a classic Demons game from this season where they do not take advantage of their opportunities. They miss some shots entirely, never mind kicking behinds, and therefore don't get the scoreboard result that they wanted. Hawthorn had that problem.
Hawthorn
should have been within 2 goals or so.
They should have
by halftime, but weren't.
But in the end, the better team won, I think.
And
the fact that it got back to 2 goals in the last quarter, I think all Melbourne supporters thought, oh no, here we go. You know, this is like going from 2 for 200 to 7 for 220. You know, this is a collapse. This is just a collapse that's about to happen.
5 for 20, that is a collapse, yes.
Yeah, well, but then Jake Melksham turns on his left and flushes a ball from 50.
What a pure kick that was.
I've enjoyed the commentary around Max Gawn as well, staying on the field.
Yeah,
it's important. But Max Gawn didn't get Jake Melksham that goal.
No.
That goal was Jake Melksham and the midfielders pushing it forward. And that was the goal that broke the camel's back. It stemmed the flow. And in the end, I think Melbourne kicked the next one after that as well, and that was game over.
What time did you go to bed on Saturday morning?
Oh, look, Ben, it's not about my personal life on this podcast.
It very much is.
Fair to say there was a lot of Melbourne supporters who were keen to celebrate and asking if I was going to Perth, which I'm not.
Yes.
But I'm looking forward to watching the game because, and this is legitimate now, being a Melbourne supporter has been difficult to say the least, for 12 years because you actually forget what it's like to be passionate about your team. Now, some people might say, oh, that's ridiculous.
Has that sort of rekindled in the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, some people might say, oh, that's ridiculous. You're a fair weather supporter. You're only jumping on when Melbourne are playing well.
Bandwagoners.
But when your team's losing every single week, it's very hard to actually care deeply. And you guys probably wouldn't know that too well, being Geelong supporters, and it's been a while since Geelong were that poor and haven't been that bad for a long time, for that extended period of time. But now that Melbourne is in the hunt, you start thinking these are moments, these are games you will remember for the rest of your life, regardless of what happens.
This is going to make it sound horrible, but if anything, Benny, it was the other way for me with Geelong, where they got into the finals this year, and I thought, whatever.
Really? Yeah, because you've been there.
They're not going to win the flag.
I honestly think that was reflected by the differential in Melbourne and Geelong fans.
Yeah, 80-20
as well.
Yeah. And Hawthorn's had their time as well. It was an exceptional effort to finish fourth for the Hawks, and I think they may have played the best two teams in it in their two finals.
Yeah, and I think I tweeted as such, certainly after the game. I agree with that entirely.
May have.
It's two of the top three,
yeah,
I would say. Richmond, Melbourne and West Coast feel like the top three to me. Collingwood, we'll talk about that game with GWS, did not impress me a huge amount and have the toughest draw in the prelims.
Well, before we get to that, we've just heard from a loyal fan's perspective, and now we're going to go to a loyal club legend's perspective, Thomas. I know you've been big on this. It's a privilege to welcome to the Fox Footy podcast a seven-time leading Melbourne goal kicker, the longest-serving Demons captain ever, an Australian Football Hall of Fame member, and he's probably pit Ron Barassi for featuring the most cutaway shots during the final series this year. His name is David Neitz. Thanks for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast, David.
Yeah, thank you. All my mates are very very sick of seeing my bots turning up on their TV screen. They've had enough.
Oh, dear. It's a little bit better than last year, to be fair, when we just kept seeing Mick Malloy.
Yes.
Very much an upgrade.
Almost a Mick Malloy this year, Nita. How proud are you of your football club right now?
No, look, they've been fantastic. You know, when you consider where they've been over the last 12 years and the journey that they've been on, you know, way back with, you know, Jimmy Steins and all that, all the fundraising you did to keep the place alive, and then the hardship around multitude of coaches and philosophies, I guess, on how we wanted to play the game. And then I guess you look at what Peter Jackson and Todd Viney and Paul Roos and now Simon Goodwin have done, the direction they've set the club up in. It's been an enormous effort, really, by all those guys are concerned. And the way we play on the field, you've got to like it. You know, we're pretty hard, tenacious at the footy, and it's good to watch.
Which person currently at the club, or retired, or a former Melbourne person, are you most happy for at the moment, David?
Which person? Oh, probably someone like Nathan Jones. For me, he's the one who's lived it. He's lived all the way through it as a player, all the hard times, and to see him get some reward for his hard work. You know, he had opportunities to go elsewhere, but stuck true to the Demons. And I think for mine, he's the one who stands out.
David, have you had a favourite moment so far this finals? Two very different games. The Geelong game was that sense of we finally won a final, whereas the Hawthorn one is almost proving that they can do it. But what did you enjoy the most?
It's sort of been what I've enjoyed the most is it's just been more of a collective of that intensity at the footy, and probably highlighted by Neville Jenner and a couple of his big hits. I mean, it's all been fair and legal, but just the ferocity that we're attacking the footy, and they're probably in both games he had some really solid collisions, hard but fair, and that's kind of the way we've been playing. And it's sort of they've been fantastic as a fan to go and just see how hard our boys are cracking in.
West Coast presents a very real challenge, and so does Richmond or Collingwood the week after if the Demons get over it. But how do you manage to separate yourself as a fan from the club, given how long you were at the club for? Can you tip with your heart or your head here?
It's difficult. It's a little bit difficult. There's plenty of heart in there, but look, you try and look at the game as objectively as possible, and you know that we're up against a challenge against West Coast. You know, we beat them last time, but you know they don't have Kennedy in and Darling for most of the game, so. But then again, we don't have Jack Viney, who's come in and just done an amazing job. Virtually hasn't played all year, and he's probably just about been best two or three players in the final so far. So look, you've got to give ourselves a chance. But realistically, West Coast finished second for a reason. They're a really good team all around the ground. Good small forwards as well. Good solid midfield. So they're going to be hard to beat, and particularly with their crowd. But from our perspective, you know, we've been there and done it. We don't hold that fear of the ground. The resilience we showed last time when we played them, and you know, they came back at us. The crowd were electric, and then we've sort of struck back and won. We've kind of been there and done that. And we've got some serious momentum. You know, we beat Geelong in round one of finals, which is a huge effort. And then, you know, we probably expected to beat Hawthorn. We haven't necessarily played that well. We've been in that situation as expected to win, but we get over the Hawthorn in good fashion and you know, head over to West with our tails up.
David, one player that we wanted to ask you about specifically was Tom McDonald, who's gone through a similar, I suppose, journey from an on-field perspective to what you had. So Tom started down back like you did, but this year has been pushed forward with great success. So it's amazing that a couple of years ago he conceded 42 goals from his direct opponent, which was the fourth most in the AFL. But between round 6 and round 23 this year, he's kicked the third most goals in the competition. Can you empathise with Tom's on-field journey, and how have you seen that transformation?
Oh, look, he's just been fantastic, hasn't he? And from a structural perspective, he is just so important for our team, whether Jesse Hogan plays or not. You know, I think you know, Jesse, when he gets back in next year, he can sort of float up the ground a little higher and have a bit more freedom. But from a structural point of view, I think Tom has been the real key and the real focal point. Just been a tower of strength, you know. And his kicking ability is pretty good as well. Yeah. He's feeling confident when he's got the ball in his hand. Probably unlike me. but look, I can sympathise and empathise with his the change in his career. And there's no doubt that he'll still sort of float back and forward at different stages throughout his career and in the ruck. So the flexibility that it gives our team is just invaluable.
And we've seen the emergence of Sam Wiedemann as well. You mentioned Jesse Hogan floating further up the field. Is there a chance you think that Jesse Hogan could spend a year or two or a sustained period of time in defence, not just to allow McDonald and Wiedemann to play forward, but also to develop his own craft?
I don't know. He could, but I'm sure that there's no doubt that he could play that role. Yeah. But I don't necessarily see that happening. I sort of see that that he might just be able to have that freedom, perhaps in a way that Jared Roughead's had, to be able to play a little bit more in the midfield and get involved from that perspective a little bit more, particularly with Wiedemann, who's, you know, his body is sort of caught up with his capabilities to some degree, just at the right time from a Melbourne perspective, and he's slotted in well.
I want to take you back just before we finish, David, because I was there this night. It was 2000. I think it was a Friday night, North Melbourne versus Melbourne, prelim final. The Wizard kicked 8, and you led your team into a grand final to play against Essendon the next week. Tell us about the feeling and emotion of preliminary final week and what Nathan Jones and Jack Viney will be going through right now.
Yeah, well, I was able to go through three preliminary finals. And look, it's exciting. It's an exciting time. It's not quite the same as grand final, but you know, you've got to be able to deal with that emotion. You know what's at stake. You know the next step. So it's all about dealing with the emotion and just sticking to what you know works and what works well. So I don't know. Perhaps in some ways, it's not a bad thing to be heading west on the road. It's just you and your mates all together. Perhaps not a bad way to do it.
Are you heading over to Perth, David, for the game?
I certainly am, mate. I've got my tickets. Like,
who with?
Supporters rushing around. I've got about 5 different airlines. So I'm getting there. I'll get myself over the ground. Which mates? I think there's who's going? Paul Hopgood's going along. A couple of Perth guys, Darren Gasper, while he's commentating, but he's going to be over there. Yeah. Darren Cowell. Rod Bridges coming along, and Alan Jakovic, I think, is just coming along as well. So it's
going to
be a
very interesting group of people to be around at 4 o'clock on Saturday local time if that comes to fruition. Just one final one, David. Why do you think the Demons can beat the Eagles on the weekend and get through to that grand final?
I think that we're probably the best team in the competition when we don't have the ball in our hands at the moment. And that sort of fanatical pressure that we put on is going to be key to us. And then I think we've got enough firepower up forward to hit the scoreboard. We've scored pretty well over the course of the year, but I certainly think it's that real fanaticism that we bring to our defensive game that gets us over the line.
Okay, so if Melbourne is the best team without the ball, who is the best player without the ball in the Melbourne side?
You'd have to go the co-captain at the moment, Jack Viney. He's just been led the way from that perspective, and young Neville Jetta goes pretty hard at it as well. So, they lead the way from that perspective.
Well, David, you're doing a great job, as always, as a Melbourne Patriot and a former captain and a great of the club and a Hall of Famer as well. And, of course, you're doing terrific work with Brew Manity. I love this beer, brewmanity.com.au. Of course, it's directly involved with MND and fighting that terrible disease as well with Neil Danaher. So thank you very much for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast, and go D's.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks very much to David Neitz for joining us on the Fox Footy podcast.
And a happy man.
Could just tell during that interview, Tom, that you were very, very up and about.
I love what he's about, and he's seen it all, Ben. It's great to see.
He has seen it all. Just quickly, before we go on to the other final, the Hawks. Mm. Where to from here? Because throughout the season, they were among the oldest 22s, like from week to week, and that was certainly reflective, I think, Maxie, in the final series. Do the Hawks need to go back to the draft here, or are they going to be doing more O'Meara Mitchell style moves during the trade period?
I don't know how many assets they have to not go back to the draft. They can't really trade for more sort of veteran players. They're probably going to get someone in the trade period in like a Stephen May type or Dylan Scheel or something ridiculous, and then just reload on the run again. There is a bit of a myth that they did have a one-year rebuild, as you say. They are still one of the oldest teams.
Ben Dixon described it as a 44-game rebuild.
And a lot of players, they have brought in quite a few young players, and that was the difference between this Hawks team and the Hawks teams of the vintage of winning three flags in a row, that they just had that veterans core that was carrying them through all of it. So, yeah, I think they need to do a little bit more, bring a little bit more youth in. But what we did see in that loss to Melbourne was that their worst players are their young players. And obviously when you're up at the top of the ladder for that long, you're not going to get the best talent. And they've done incredibly well with very few draft picks to nail some of those selections. And that's what's kept them that's what's enabled them to finish fourth this year.
Is it a bit Geelong-ish because the Cats have a bottom six that is very young and probably their worst players as well?
I think so, yeah. And Geelong's probably had a few more shots and missed a few more shots at the draft table. They've maybe been overstated how well Geelong has been doing in draft circles for a few years now, whereas the Hawks have done very well with few opportunities, which is some parts skill, but a lot of parts luck. I think it's fair to say.
A few people, Thomas, in the aftermath of the Hawthorn loss have been saying, don't write these Hawks off the trade period. What have they got planned?
Oh, yeah.
Do you get the feeling that the Hawks might be, again, aggressive players during the off-season?
I think they always are. I think Sydney's probably in the same boat as well. I mean, how much money do they have in their cap? I think they've got enough to target a big fish for sure. Whether they want to go for two medium-sized fish as well, that's also a possibility.
Tasty.
I mean, they've been linked to a lot of players. I mean, they get linked to everyone, don't they?
They do.
You never discount them. Dylan Scheel, Mitch McGovern, Tom Lynch will go to Richmond, but he was linked to the Hawks as well. Who's the one you just said?
Stephen May.
I'm not sure what they need, but I know they need something to give them a little kick along because they're not going to bottom out.
Yeah.
So to hold somewhere between, let's say, ambitiously 4 and conservatively 11, they need to be able to find something from somewhere.
Yeah.
Do they need a key forward to replace Ruffy?
Well, they do, but they're not easy to find in itself. Steve May can play forward. Steve May's a terrific forward.
And Steve May as a defender as well, because I don't think James Frawley's getting any younger and probably any better as a player.
No, so he's not.
He would certainly fit in nicely down as a key to position player.
Well, James Sicily can go forward. Imagine if you had Steve May as well that can go forward. You've got a fair bit of flexibility, and one thing Alistair Clarkson likes is players who can play in various positions and allow his coaching staff to flip them around like chess pieces.
No, I've heard it's just the system and he's never made a coaching move in his life.
Isn't he temperamental in his press conferences after losses?
Yeah, it was quite punchy and short, wasn't it?
Passionate man.
I don't like it.
I kind of don't like it.
I don't like it. Not because I feel sorry for any media who cop it. I just think it doesn't reflect well on him. It makes him seem like a bit of a petulant tennis player.
Ooh.
And a sore loser. Yeah, I don't think it reflects well on the club either. Because you actually speak to the fans. The media are the conduit between the fans and the coach. And when you are aggressive towards the journalist, like that, in this case it was Tom Brown from Channel 7, then, I don't know, some fans might like it, but if I'm a fan of Hawthorn, I actually want to hear his answer to every question.
Well, in my understanding, I mean, the Hawks are known for being a little bit more difficult to deal with media-wise.
A lot more difficult.
I think it's fair to say. Yeah. I believe that there were some media types in the rooms last week who were trying to get an interview with Hawks players, asking for maybe 10 different players and unable to actually get an interview.
Is that your understanding?
They just weren't. Mm. The players weren't willing to talk to the media either. So it's not just the club.
This is post-game after the Melbourne.
Yeah, so there's a lot of issues from some players as well.
It's very media-centric, but I will say this. It's not necessarily incumbent on the media managers. That needs to come from higher up, the CEO, the coach, the football department.
Football manager.
The players don't actually have a choice. When they're asked to do an interview post-game, at good media clubs, they just do it. Because they know that's part of the game. Hawthorn feels as if it doesn't need to be as open because it's been so successful for so long, which is where St Kilda got into trouble a few years ago because they'd been relatively successful, didn't open their doors to the media, they lost games, they went down the bottom of the ladder, and they were cooked. Being open to the media needs to be regardless of how many games you win. It just needs to be a blanket rule across the league for the amount of money these players get paid.
So Collingwood were very open to the media last week, but also after the game. Tom, you and I are in the rooms afterwards, and it's one thing to be in the rooms after a Collingwood win, but to be in there after a Collingwood finals win is absolute mayhem.
Well, for anyone that's ever been in the rooms after a win for any club, you know there's a roped-off section, a cordoned-off section, and normally it's fairly skinny sort of area. It's quite tight. This rope was about half the room. Half the room was fans pushing forward and trying to get a piece of this Collingwood emotion and this... Oh, there's Dr. Turf walking past, a big Melbourne supporter. Give him a thumbs up. Trying to be part of this feeling in the Collingwood rooms. Oh, it was great. It was infectious, wasn't it, Ben?
It was. It was infectious. Talking to Jaden Stevenson after the game, who didn't, by his own admission, have his best game. But
he was very honest.
Almost caught himself in the fact that he was almost stargazing a little bit during the fourth quarter when he was on the bench and they kicked a couple of goals and he heard the elongated Collingwood chant going across the MCG. He was almost in awe of the situation that he was in. He said that's only happened twice this year, on Anzac Day, I think pre-game, but then during the game on the weekend against the GWS Giants.
Seeing something is one thing, but hearing it is another.
Yeah.
If you're a player in those situations, that's what Melbourne has against them this weekend and the umpires against West Coast, because that raw emotion from the fans is something you can't replicate anywhere else.
And Alan Richardson was big on 360 on that on Monday night.
Yes, and I suppose, okay, based on the reaction to that story which we put up, I have to state this. This happens any time a team plays another team from another state. This is not purely about West Coast. West Coast, you do not need to feel persecuted. We are not attacking you. Having said that, you are plus 83 or 86 in free kicks for the year at home. Whereas you are even on the road. It is definitely a thing that happens at Optus Stadium, where the noise of affirmation means that umpires call free kicks for the home team, but that they do not for the away team. This is a thing in all world sports. This is not an attack on the West Coast Eagles or their fans. Good on you for cheering, and it's good that you can have that influence. I love that they can have that sort of influence on a game, that they can cause their team to have a better chance of winning because they're so passionate. That's fantastic. It's not a negative thing at all. But Richo's right when he points it out.
About three disclaimers, I think, in that statement.
I just... there's a bit of a battle going on at the moment, right? You look at the front page of the Herald Sun on Monday. It was, you know, huge pictures of Tigers, Pies, Demons. Mm. And there's maybe a West Coast player in the corner going, hey, we're in here too.
Yeah.
And I think WA feels like that a little bit. You also look at the WA media, and to be fair, they are doing the exact same thing, but for the Eagles. I'm not sure whether it's chicken and the egg, whether it's in response to the other side of the country's response. The Eagles do feel like that they're being persecuted. And yes, sometimes we do not talk about the Eagles as much as we do the Victorian teams in Victorian media, because we are catering to the Victorian fans who are reading it.
Yes.
We try and be more broad as a national broadcaster at Fox Footy, and I think we do a fair job at that.
Yes, I think we give it our best shot there, Thomas.
I think Max has spoken very well there, Ben.
No, he's done very, very well. Just on the Pies and the Giants game. So one thing that was really interesting to take out of the game was the Pies were certainly made to earn the win, but in that fourth quarter, there was a big differential between the returning players who returned the week before. So the Giants had four inclusions against Sydney: Green, Williams, De Boer, and Deledio. Between the four of them in that fourth quarter, they accumulated 9 disposals in total.
Very interesting, yeah.
In the three players that returned the week before for Collingwood against West Coast were Treloar, Howe, and Goldsack. Treloar had 12 himself in the fourth quarter. Howe was the number one rated player on the ground according to the official AFL player ratings. He had 7.
In the fourth,
And Goldsack had 3 disposals in the fourth quarter, which was more than, you know, Williams, Green, any of those four players individually, but played an unbelievable game right across.
Defensively. What does Nathan Buckley call it? The second week blues is absolutely a thing in football.
This was flagged pre-game on the Fox Footy coverage. They put up some numbers from the champion data numbers, the Supercoach numbers.
Yep, ranking points.
Ranking points for every player. That the average player, when they come back from injury the first week, if the average rating is about 67, first week back they're 64, second week back 61.
Yeah.
So on average, every player is worse the second week they come back after injury.
Because it's always harder to recover after a game.
It's the general muscle soreness.
Yeah, and it's also the, I guess, I'm not sure what emotional impact it has, but there's the... When you're first back, there's clearly a spike because you are super excited to get in and play again. Now, not that you're super excited the next week, but it's not the same, clearly, and those stats prove that. I find it incredible how well Treloar played in that fourth term.
He was awesome.
Given that he'd been out for an extended period of time with a hamstring, he'd played against West Coast, then flown from Perth to Melbourne and played again. That is an amazing effort for Adam Treloar to do that for an injury that would have taken some mental hardship as well as some physical hardship as well. They're not easy to get over, those significant hamstrings.
He was awesome, and he's going to be a huge player.
I like the Pies at the moment, Ben.
In the Pies. Just on the Giants as well. So immediately the thought with the Giants turns to what happens with their list next. And as Jared Waitley sort of put on 360 last night, it's about who's going to be picked off from this talented Giants list. Ryan Griffin won't be there because he retired, and Leon Cameron revealed that in his post-match press conference afterwards, and he was a wonderful servant at the Bulldogs and I think really highly rated off the field at the Giants. He had a big influence there. But then Dylan Scheel and Rory Lobb, Tom, are the two players that have been widely linked to potential moves at the end of the season.
Yeah, Rory Lobb we sort of speak about every week, but as time goes on and now the Giants have lost, I think he's more and more likely to end up at Freo or West Coast.
Right.
Certainly, at the very least, the Dockers and the Eagles believe he's extremely gettable. And as a result, they're pushing hard for him. He's on $750,000 a year at DWS, 1 year left in his contract. He could be the player that leaves and allows the Giants to free up some space.
Yeah, so that's been the big talk, is that the Giants need someone to leave to free up this space. Rory Lobb's on $750,000 a year. Like, that's a salary, I think, of a premier ruckman in the competition.
Yeah,
is that backloaded?
Probably not that.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how it's loaded. But what I do know is that they had to re-sign players, and Jeremy Cameron is another one, and Dylan Scheel for slightly overs in order to keep them and keep this group together. Yep. But then it extends other problems because down the track you might be caught in a bit of trouble.
Yep.
And that's what's happened.
Lions and the Suns have had that issue, I think, in previous years, re-salary cap, particularly the Lions. I've been pretty open about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I think GWS CEO Dave Matthews John Ralph relayed these comments on AFL Tonight last night, that every team should be up to the cap limit. Every team should be spending as much as they can, because then doing their team a disservice if they do not.
Yeah, but it's the lack of flexibility for future years where good clubs get it, and not that GWS isn't a good club, as we've read this morning, but the Giants potentially have made a mistake here.
Well, the question is whether they have locked themselves into this, or if they knew that they would be tight and were planning to make moves in order to extricate themselves from this sort of scenario. They would have known that this was coming. They would have known that, all right, we're going to have a bit of a tight situation here, but we'll get something done. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, well, if you win a flag, that solves everything. They haven't won
that
a flag,
mm.
and as a result, they're in a bit more bother. You can be in salary cap, in my opinion, you can be in salary cap turmoil, but if you win a premiership, that's all fine.
Yeah, it's all for that. Absolutely.
That's what you're there for. We're in the premiership business.
And the question is whether their window is closed.
Well, I don't think it's closed.
No, I don't think it's closed either.
Closing?
Maybe closing, but it's not closed.
Yeah, I wouldn't say closed.
Dylan Scheel, Matty Barmy wrote a great piece for foxfooty.com.au on Sunday about the state of play for Dylan Scheel, the clubs that he's been linked to, the four big Victorian clubs for Dylan Scheel. Still contracted to the Giants, but as we mentioned, they want to try and get rid of some calorie, or they want to make some salary cap space in there, Thomas. Is it either Lobb or Scheel that goes at the end of this season, or is there a possibility that both could go?
Oh, no, there's certainly a possibility that both go, because I think it's slightly different in that I think Scheel is more open to going than Lobb.
Right.
So
why do the Fremantle and West Coast think he's so gettable, Lobb?
Because he's from Perth, and they can offer him a long-term deal. I think Scheel is probably more open to going because he'd like to play in a team like a big Victorian team.
And he's probably fourth or fifth string during the final series in that midfield as well.
I think Dylan Scheel is a star, but I don't think he's a superstar. I'd classify him as a gun. He's a very good player, but you know, if you're going to be on $900,000 or $1 million a year,
$1.2 million.
Yeah, you want to be top three for the Brownlow Medal, and he's not going to be that. And I know there's other circumstances, but to me, he's just an extremely good player at the moment. But he's at risk of just being that if he stays there. If he goes somewhere else, I reckon he can be an absolute superstar and be the main man.
If I was Dylan Sheil, I have no idea why I would go to Carlton or St Kilda, which are two of the ones being bandied about. I understand that would be for financial reasons, but I don't think an extra 100 or 200K a year, as much money as that is, even at those levels, is worth being at another bottom club and building up for the next 5 years.
Considering that he was part of a bottom club for so many years.
Yes. If you're moving, you've got to do it. You've got to do it for success. You can't be doing it for money. It feels weird if you'd be doing it for money.
Unless you're at the back end of your career and you've already won a flag.
This guy's 25 years old and he's coming in towards his prime. Jared Polek had a very interesting interview with 3AW over the weekend, Thomas. You normally sort of hear players, once they leave a club, open up a little bit, but I don't think I've heard a player open up this much for like Jared Polek did in this 3AW interview over the weekend.
Yeah, it was terrific. I mean, have a listen to it. Josh Gabalich wrote an article on foxfooty.com.au off this piece. I mean, on one hand, it's great that Polek is so forthright and open about it. On the other hand, it's a little bit peculiar that he can say such things and he's not actually a North Melbourne player yet.
Yeah.
They still need to somehow do this deal. I think they probably will, but it's not absolutely locked and loaded yet. So it's a 5-year deal at North Melbourne. I think he's a good player. I think he's a very good player at his best. Is he going to win a Brownlow? No. Is he going to be North Melbourne's best player? Probably not. So it might just be one of those deals that allows a Josh Kelly in future years to come and an Andrew Gaff, because now they're building a group of solid senior players.
Yep, North could have spent its money somewhere. To give it to someone.
But how much money do they have? So there's Polek is likely going to land at the Roos. Andrew Gaff's still very heavily linked. Yeah. Aaron Hall's also been linked as well.
Well, they wouldn't pay much for Hall, I wouldn't have thought.
So if they got all three, or maybe two of those three, does that still leave them some breathing space to entice Josh Kelly next year?
I couldn't tell you conclusively that's the case, but I'd be surprised if it didn't. I think they have planned for this, and they, if anything, are a little bit behind in their pursuit of big fish, and as a result, they've got more money than they thought they'd have at this stage. Right.
Which is why you can throw so much at Poland.
Yeah, good on them. I think North are doing a great job in the way they're approaching this, and all they need is one. You get Pollock, that could bring Gaff. It could bring anyone next. It could bring Kelly next year. North, as we've seen, isn't a club that can bottom out because their supporter base isn't huge like a Carlton or a Collingwood or an Essendon. So they need to somehow remain somewhat relevant. They did this year. They could be better next year, but they do have that issue, Max, that you've spoken about, of having a slightly older list. But I do rate some of their kids coming through as well.
Yeah, although I wonder, Luke David Uniacke is still an interesting one to me. He was not playing that much at the end of this season, and he was one of those things in the draft that seemed like a sure thing.
Well, on reflection, I'd never saw Davies Uniacke play a good game live.
Okay.
And I saw him play maybe 5 or 6 games last year. And he was always in the pick one discussion. Going down in pick four, I thought it's probably about right. He's definitely a top 10 pick last year. I always thought the Roos should have taken Jaden Stevenson at pick four. And gosh, that would have been very, very handy for them.
You are a hindsight genius, Ben.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. I think there's some question marks over Davies Uniacke. Which is one year in.
But it's a big miss if it's a miss. Yeah. And we've seen in recent years players coming in having a huge impact in their first year in the AFL system, even out of the national draft. And Davies Uniacke has not. I think that's fair to say.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with North Melbourne over the coming years, no doubt about that. Now, it's time for Australia's favourite segment on the Fox Footy podcast, brought to you by NIB, Health Cover How It Should Be. It's Fair or Farce.
Fair or farce?
Oh, jeez. Ben,
yes.
Fair or farce, thanks to NIB. The mid-season trade period is good for footy.
Fair, I think. And from what I understand, or from what I heard from this competition committee that happened last week, that they're open to it, this competition.
Maybe not
committee.
Next year, I think more so the year after.
They were a little bit grey, it's the AFL's favourite colour, in terms of what it might look like. Whether it's trading or drafting or whatever that might be, but there's certainly a lot more openness to it.
Max.
Hi.
Fair or farce, thanks to NIB. Dan Hannabury should be St Kilda's captain next year.
Farce, I think they've got some reasonable options inside the club. I mean, I don't see a reason to strip it from Jaron Geary specifically. Yeah. I think St Kilda Also, giving it to a first-year player at a club is would be an interesting decision.
Well, certainly. It's a Chris Judd move and yes. Nothing else, really.
But Dan Hannabury's not in the Chris Judd mold, despite the private school
and
connections.
With the Hannabury connection, the bringing him in, I like it in the sense that it could be an absolute bargain, but he could also continue to be injured and play very little, and then you've got your captain in his first year doing nothing for the Saints, and that would be a terrible scenario.
Ben, Fair or Fasting, NIB.
Is that the name of the segment now?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Ben.
Yes.
Going to the draft is a hugely overrated philosophy.
Yeah, that's fair, I reckon.
Wow, this is big.
Yeah,
Ben.
I reckon that's
commentating
fair.
The TAC Cup Grand Final this weekend.
Tune in.
But think of the actual quote though. Going to the draft.
Yes. Yeah. So going to the draft. So it's not necessarily for a club that is in the premiership window. Going to the draft, I think, is not absolutely necessary all the time. Having said that, though, Port Adelaide didn't go to the draft last year. They had a lot of picks, but they were a lot of late picks.
Yeah.
And I want a lot of those players were injured this year, but I also do wonder if that'll backfire. But I think it is slightly overrated, Tom.
Ben.
Yes.
Again.
No, Max, sorry.
Hi, that's me. I'm this one.
Max, Fair or Fasting to NIB. It's best for Geelong and Menzel if they part ways.
Oh, Chris Scott loves Menzel, but I don't know that they are in agreement as to what they want. So that might be fair because I do not see Geelong giving Dan Menzel a contract over more than a year. And that's what he wants. And if that's the case, it's one of those things where they've had so much history, but it's just not working out. A breakup is sort of just necessary.
12 months ago, I would have said fast. Now I would definitely say fair.
Yeah.
They clearly need a bit of a revamp in that forward structure, and he does not fit into what that revamp would be.
Ben, fair or fast? Hawthorn needs to mature as a club and become more open to media, and that starts with Clarko.
Yes, that's fair, Tom.
Yeah.
It's fair. And Caroline Wilson on Footy Classified on Monday night was massive on this. Now, from a general fan perspective, it's not probably a huge issue. But for us in the media, to have access to the Pies, the Demons, and personally to the Giants last week, the Giants were very accommodating last week.
I think the Eagles did it in the West this week.
The Eagles do it almost every week. Right. They always put up a truckload of players during the week, so full credit to the Eagles there. But I think it would certainly help relations, and I think Alistair Clarkson would have, I would think, a fair bit of influence over that decision, Tom.
You cannot afford to be a club that looks standoffish if you're not winning flags consistently.
Max, hi. Fair or fast, Steve Hocking is right to want to halve the number of rules.
Which ones is he cutting? Like, do goals not count for 6 points anymore?
Answer the question, fair or fast?
Fast. I understand wanting to simplify the AFL's rules, as we've seen with the 19-man stuff. There is a lot of simplification that needs to be done.
Yes.
Half might be a bit very harsh for the rule book. But I think there are some things that need to be changed, and that's for the best. But that might be a bit much.
And Ben, last to you. Fair or fast thanks to NIB. If Richmond loses this year's grand final, it's an automatic failure of a season.
Yeah, that's fair. That's totally fair because they've been the dominant team all the way throughout the year. There's an unbelievable expectation on them to go back-to-back this year. And surely the club, Brendan Gale and Damien Harwick in particular, will be grading it as a fail if they lose in the grand final.
And that's the end of Fair or Fast thanks to NIB, Max.
Fair or fast.
It gets lower, I think.
Yeah, it does.
Real Bleeding Gums Murphy sort of areas eventually.
Let's move on to the tips and the cups. A huge weekend. Not only is a grand final spot up for grabs for Collingwood and Richmond, but also the David Cloke Cup is up for grabs on Friday night for Collingwood and Richmond. What's your initial take, Thomas? Is it Richmond all the way for you?
Well, you just go on form. So the Giants' form heading into the finals is better than the Swans, so I tip the Giants. As I think you did as well, Max.
Well, it struggled the last couple of weeks, but we still tipped them. Yes.
Yeah, Melbourne's form heading in was better than Geelong's.
Yep. Well, yes.
It was better.
They'd beaten better teams.
Yep. You're right. And so I'm just going the same this weekend. I just think Richmond were more impressive against Hawthorn than Collingwood were against the Giants.
Certainly.
I did say that the Collingwood Giants game wouldn't really make Damien Hardwick too nervous, and I stand by that because I think the Pies had periods of really good dominance, but I don't think they looked like a team that could make a grand final. I'm happy to be proven wrong because if they do beat the Tigers, I think it would be great for footy.
So the last time they met Maxi back in round 19, the Pies didn't have Jordan Ngoi or Adam Treloar. They've also got Tyson Goldsack back, who's having a big influence. Is that sway your tip in any way?
It makes me more likely to tip the Pies. I still think that Richmond, if everyone thinks they're the best team in it, everyone should be tipping them. It is hard to find the way that Collingwood wins this. Mm. You know, you need a huge game from Dugowie or Treloar or something like that, something completely different. But Richmond is just in such strong form. I don't think Collingwood is the team that can unseat them. And realistically, that qualifying final against West Coast, that was their elimination game, I think.
Do Richmond just make a sure thing and put Jack Graham straight to steel side bottom, who's been the Pies' number one ball winner for the past four consecutive games?
And not just
games.
A ball winner, an incredible user of the ball. Finds space, chips it sideways, rarely wastes a possession. I think that's probably the smart, logical move. I still don't think it's going to have... I think that is really irrelevant to the game. I think the Tigers will win by five or six goals, and that'll be it.
It's going to be the same as their other two games this season. It'll be within two or three goals at three-quarter time, and the Tigers win by 40.
I think so, yep.
Then we head to Perth for the 3:20 p.m. game, 1:20 p.m. local time, for the Stephen Armstrong Cup.
Good, I like that.
West Coast Eagles against Melbourne at Optus Stadium. Now, there's some crazy sort of theories and plans, Maxie, that have been mooted for Melbourne supporters to try and diminish the influence of the Perth crowd.
So, with some basis in fact, at least the first one, the idea that Melbourne fans will buy tickets and leave the seats empty to sort of negate the crowd noise. Because the idea that one seat being empty will lower the decibels to some degree is preposterous.
Farcical, yeah.
Yes. Very far. It's farce. It's not fair, Tom.
Thanks, Dan. Yeah.
But the other one is even worse.
Yes.
The idea from Neil Mitchell, I guess, noted football expert Neil Mitchell.
Prominent Melbourne voice.
That, and Channel 7 apparently agreeing to this, that they're going to have a live stream of the fans for the Demons to look at during the game, like a live feed from Fed Square where they're having a bit of an activation for the fans to support them. I don't see the point of this. In the rooms, look, we have fans. It's like, well, I think the Melbourne players are probably aware that they have fans in Melbourne.
They're all just nice little media stories around the actual game, though,
aren't
they?
Of course they are.
The game is what really matters. And
it's just so weird.
I'm disappointed to be tipping West Coast. I just think it's a bridge
really?
Too far.
This is
Melbourne.
A real head tip from you, Thomas.
Yeah, it is. I think West Coast will win. Yeah.
Right. Why?
I think West Coast with Kennedy and Darling are just a bit too strong at home.
The last time these two sides met as well, that Eagles forward line looked very different. Kennedy wasn't there for the whole game, and Darling wasn't there for three quarters, I think, of the game as well. And there was an interesting stat from that game as well. The Eagles still had 47 entries and still kicked 14 goals in that game, the Eagles. So they were still dominant. It's just Melbourne probably outscored them in that case.
And that's only going to get worse, the fact that everyone's talking about how West Coast is going to be better from that game. Melbourne has Jack Viney back, and the Eagles don't have Brad Shepherd. Mm. Both two things that are going to enable the Demons to score even better. I think there's a bit of a sense that, West Coast is better, and that was a close game, therefore now the West Coast Eagles will get on top. Melbourne is clearly getting better as well. We have seen the last 2 years that you can improve during the final series and play yourself into this form. That growth does happen. And so I'm tipping Melbourne. I think West Coast is a very, very good team, but I think Melbourne is peaking at the exact right time. Yeah. West Coast didn't impress me too much.
It'll be tight, though, won't it?
This is a 51-49 tip.
Yeah, yeah. James Harms will go to Elliot Yeo. You can take that to the bank, Ben.
Take it to the bank, Thomas. I will be doing that.
That will happen. And
depositing.
The other key, Clarko, don't listen to this. Contested footy is going to be the key to this. Because if you look at the stat, the Eagles are 17-0 when the contested possession count for them is minus 11 or better, 0-6 when it's minus 12 or worse.
That's incredible.
And who is one of the greatest contested possession teams of the last decade? This year's Melbourne.
The Melbourne Demons.
The Melbourne Demons.
And they should be with Viney and Oliver and Brayshaw and Harms and the clinchers. It's going to be a ripping game regardless. So
it's a very similar thing to the Melbourne Hawthorn game in a way, because the Eagles need to keep control, whereas the Demons want to have that chaos, get those ground balls inside 50. And I think they can do that, and I think they can win.
Should I anticipate putting out an SOS for you come 6 p.m. Saturday if Melbourne win?
No, because I'm in Sydney preparing for the Fox Cricket JLT domestic one day.
Yes!
What? New South Wales versus Victoria. So I'll be very tame and just enjoy watching the game maybe in a casual Sydney pub that doesn't have NRL on.
Dominic Thornley and Ian Harvey lining up for the two respective
I think Greg Mayle is in the mix. But
Aiden Blizzard going to play?
Looking forward to being part of the Fox Blizzard. Cricket coverage. Good Channel 501, Ben.
Yes, no, the Fox Cricket coverage is up and about on Channel 501. We'll have all eyes, though, this weekend on Channel 504. Fox Footy will have both finals, ad break free, live in HD. It's going to be magnificent. And we'll be back next week on the Fox Footy podcast, all thanks to NIB Health Cover, how it should be. And remember to keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.